regime's genocidal war tops 32,700. Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Mikati denounces an Israeli raid which targeted a car carrying UN peacekeeping forces in southern Lebanon, leaving at least four people injured. Also in the headlines, thousands of protesters rally in central London to slam Israel's ongoing massacre of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, calling for a ceasefire there. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. The Israeli military has launched new aerial and ground attacks on Gaza as the death toll from the nearly 6 months of onslaught on the besieged strip keeps climbing. Israeli warplanes have once again targeted the central city of Deir al-Balah as well as Rafah in the south. Civil defense crew and paramedics are struggling to recover the wounded from bombed-out buildings due to a lack of equipment. Heavy fighting is also underway in the vicinity of the Al-Shifa Hospital, located in Gaza City. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, 82 people were killed in the last 24 hours, bringing the death toll to more than 32,700 since early October. Nearly 75,200 Palestinians have also been wounded. Most of the casualties are women and children. Relatives of the victims of the latest Israeli strikes condemn the regime for its brutal attacks and narrate their harrowing stories.
They kill women and the elderly, people who are not at fault in this war. They are innocent people. We are talking about children. This is a little girl. What has she done wrong?
They were asleep and unaware of anything. Mr. Kamal was an English teacher who has been an educator his whole life. They had no hand in anything. But the enemy's planes mercilessly bombed the house, leaving no one alive in the family. The children were asleep. Look, he's sleeping like this, like he always does. They targeted the house while they were inside.
The home houses more than 50 people, four or five families, including mostly children and women, civilian residents confined to their apartments. A rocket was dropped on their four-story building without prior warning or notice.
Those who died, all of them were children, women, and elderly. There is just one child. The rest were all infants, 1 month to 4 months. This is not a war. This is extermination. Trees, animals, houses, universities, schools, children, and women are all being exterminated.
Hamas has released a statement marking March 30 as Land Day, saying that resistance is the only way to liberate Palestine. The group said that establishing a fully sovereign Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital is not the concern of the Palestinians alone, but all Islamic nations and free people of the world. It said that Al-Aqsa flood operation was part of the Palestinians' journey to defend their land and holy sites. It stressed that resistance against the occupation will continue until the legitimate rights of Palestinians are restored. Palestinians commemorate Land Day on an annual basis, dating back to March 30 of 1976. That was the day when several Palestinians were killed during protests against then-Israeli regime's decision to expropriate large tracts of ancestral Palestinian land. Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Mikati has condemned the targeting of UN forces in southern Lebanon that wounded three international peacekeeping forces. The Lebanese media say Mikati called the head of the UN's interim force in Lebanon to express solidarity after the agency's personnel were targeted by an Israeli drone. UNIFIL spokesperson Andrea Tenenti also denounced the attack as, quote, unacceptable, saying that the issue is under probe. The Israeli regime has denied that its forces hit any UNIFIL vehicles. Israel has carried out a number of airstrikes and shelling against Lebanon since October 7th that caused civilian casualties as well. In November, UNIFIL said one of its patrols was hit by Israeli gunfire in southern Lebanon. UNIFIL last month said that the Israeli military violated international law by fatally shooting a group of clearly identifiable journalists. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement and the Israeli regime's military have once again exchanged fire in areas along the southern Lebanese border. Earlier, our Beirut correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us with more details.
But that is only just one part, of course, of the continuous Israeli shelling and aggressions against Lebanon, which have escalated in the last few days and weeks as well. Today we had several attacks, whether from the Air Force, the airstrikes or artillery against several towns. Just recently there was an air shelling against Marun al-Ras and Yarun. There were also three different airstrikes against the town of Al-Taibe that targeted agricultural fields, and that's just also part of the systematic destruction of Lebanon's agricultural fields. There was also a lot of artillery fire from the Motuli area towards Kfar Kila and the surrounding towns like Khiam and Al-Wazani as well. We also had other attacks against Malkiya and Blida, in addition to the Marun al-Ras and Al-Taibe attacks. Hezbollah has, of course, been adamant on attempting to limit the scope of the confrontation as a whole. We even saw that yesterday they targeted the 91st Division with the use of Burkan rockets. However, they are using more heavy heavier rockets, or they are increasing the number of operations against Israelis. Last night, and actually just after midnight, there was a movement of Israeli soldiers and vehicles in Al-Maliki, and they made sure that they targeted that area. They said they inflicted heavy losses upon those units as well. And even yesterday when they targeted the 91st Division, they used heavier rockets like Fallop instead of their normal guided missiles or mortars. And so we see that there's an attempt by Hezbollah to go back, to make sure that they are bringing the Israelis back to this limited scope of the confrontation. We know from sources that there are Western and European sides that are reassuring the Lebanese government, after having put so much pressure on the Lebanese government to try to stop Hezbollah's operations. Now we see there are reassurances that they are trying to limit the Israeli escalation, and they are trying to put pressure on Israel not to escalate the situation further.
The Secretary General of Palestine's Islamic Jihad movement has hailed Iran's support for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Ziad Nakhala said that Palestinians could not have continued their resistance against Israeli occupation without Iran's full support. He noted that Iran has always sided with justice and defended the Palestinian nation since the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Nakhala made the comments after meeting the Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian in Tehran. The two sides discussed the latest developments in Gaza and the ongoing Israeli onslaught against civilians in the Palestinian territory. The Palestinian official had previously held talks with senior Iranian officials. Moving on to Sana'a in Yemen, where tens of thousands gathered once again and took to the streets of the capital and several other cities to reaffirm their full support for the oppressed Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Abdul Latif al-Washali has more.
On the third Friday of Ramadan, tens of thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of Sana'a and several other cities, renewing their unwavering support for Palestinians. Some held banners that read, "We are entering the 10th year, and the Palestinian cause remains our priority."
We're entering the 10th year of our resistance against an all-out war on the Yemeni people. We are here today to show our continuous support for the Palestinians in Gaza and across the occupied territories. When the countries that possess enormous military capabilities failed to support the Palestinians in Gaza and even conspired with the Israeli regime against them, the war-stricken Yemenis came out to support their oppressed brothers. They left the world in awe with a united front and a soaring popularity in the region.
Protesters chanted slogans vowing to retaliate against the U.S. and the U.K. airstrikes on the Yemeni cities. They also pledged to escalate their naval operations as long as the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians and the aggression against Yemen continue. Yemenis also slammed the United Nations Security Council for its failure to put an end to the Israeli atrocities in Palestine, despite its recent ceasefire resolution.
We consider the Security Council complicit in the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. The United States manipulates the Security Council and the United Nations based on its interests. That is why the U.S. used its veto power three times to prevent a ceasefire in Gaza. But besides that, the Security Council resolutions are ineffective in ending the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in Gaza.
The problem is not with the Security Council or the United Nations, but with the United States, which has the power to control and manipulate these international organizations. There are many binding decisions that have not been implemented because Washington uses its power against the weak and oppressed people of the world. It is necessary to find an effective mechanism for the Security Council because there are many countries that are yearning to be liberated from the Western hegemony. The events that the world is witnessing in some African countries are a clear proof for this desire for change.
On Thursday, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, criticized the US and the UK for exploiting the humanitarian situation in Yemen. He slammed them for threatening to cut the UN-provided aid to Yemenis in order to stop the country's naval operations. Al-Houthi asserted that, according to the US officers, the American Navy has not faced such a humiliation in the international waters since the 19th century.
Neither the military aggression against Yemen nor the cessation of the supply for humanitarian aid has succeeded in halting Yemen's naval operations. Furthermore, officials state that the ongoing Western aggression only serves to motivate the Yemeni army to continue enhancing its capabilities. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
In London, people have once again hit the streets to slam Israel's atrocities in Gaza, calling for an immediate halt to its genocidal onslaught against Palestinians. Protesters slammed the UK government's support for Israel and called for arms export to Tel Aviv to be immediately stopped. Participants marched from Russell Square to Trafalgar Square. The protests also coincided with the Palestine Land Day, which marks the massacre of Palestinians protesting against Israel's confiscation of their land in 1976. The UK has been witnessing regular nationwide pro-Palestine demonstrations since early October. In one such rally, hundreds of Britons shut down arms factories across England and Scotland to condemn the country's complicity in the Israeli genocide against Palestinians. Well, a French firm has just been accused of providing arms components for Israel, which are being used against civilians in Gaza. Nearly a ton of parts needed for use in Israeli and NATO machine guns were apparently shipped back in October in what leftist French parliamentarians have termed a massive scandal. Ramin Mazari has more from Paris.
A new report from a French investigative website alleges that France is supplying arms components for use by the Israeli army in Gaza. Nearly a ton of parts for machine guns was sent in October to Israel by a French firm whose parts have already been discovered in Syria, Somalia, and elsewhere. The parts are for the type of weapon which has been used by Israel in many of their recent massacres of Palestinians. The French government responded that the parts are being used by Israel only for use in arms manufacturing for foreign customers, but many find that explanation hard to believe. Opposition lawmakers have called it a massive scandal and accused the defense minister of lying before Parliament. France claims that the only weapons authorized for export to Israel are for purely defensive purposes. But activists say there is a lack of transparency in the arms export information, which the government declassifies, and an overall lack of honesty.
C'est une plaisanterie de mauvais goût.
These quote-unquote explanations of the French government are a joke and in very bad taste. How on earth can we possibly believe that machine guns are a defensive weapon? However, this is very much in keeping with the national policy, which is total collaboration with and cover for the regime of Israel.
Spain, the Netherlands, Japan, and Canada have recently banned all arms exports to Israel, and pressure is mounting for all Western nations to follow suit. Multiple top NGOs say that France is violating international treaties it has signed by continuing to supply military equipment to Israel, even though it seems clear that these arms are being used to commit genocide, crimes against humanity, and other war crimes.
The complicity of France with the Israeli genocidal regime is continuing, even despite the emotion and the anger generated by the mass murder of tens of thousands of people in Gaza. We shouldn't be fooled when Paris rarely, and only rarely, modifies its tone slightly towards Tel Aviv, because its actions are 99% against the Palestinians.
The French arms dealers, Eurolynx, who since 1950 have supplied the French army with weapons parts for use in places like Algeria, Vietnam, and elsewhere, is expected to come under massive local protests in the coming weeks. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has made a visit to the Turkmen capital of Ashgabat in order to boost bilateral ties between the two countries. Farzana Ashirion has more.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made a visit to the Turkmen capital of Ashgabat on Wednesday in order to boost bilateral ties between the two countries. Amir Abdollahian met with Turkmen President Sardar Gurbanguliyevich Berdimuhamedov. The Iranian top diplomat also met with his Turkmen counterpart Rashid Meredov. During the meeting, both sides expressed satisfaction with the progressing relations between the two countries.
The volume of our trade is boosting significantly, and with the agreements we signed today, we expect a jump in our trade. We will also increase our cooperation in the field of electricity and gas.
Pursuing the memorandum of understandings assigned by the both countries' presidents in 2022 was also one of the main goals of the visit.
One of the main goals of the visit was to pave the way for Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's visit to Turkmenistan in order to pursue the agreement signed between the two countries.
According to Iranian officials, the relationship between Iran and Turkmenistan is not just a neighborly relationship, but a relationship of brotherhood, and they seek to deepen the ties as regional policy is high on the agenda of the Iranian president's foreign policy. The Iranian foreign minister's visit to Ashgabat is aimed at consolidating bilateral ties. Iran and Turkmenistan enjoy good relations as two neighboring countries, and now Tehran and Ashgabat are planning to further boost their relations in various fields, including trade and economy. Farzana Shuryun, Ashgabat.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight. In the blessed month of Ramadan, the residents of Gaza are facing famine because of Israel's policy of deliberate starvation, with the sole objective being to make Gaza virtually uninhabitable. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Ramadan, one of the most sacred months for Muslims worldwide, blends spiritual introspection with family life in the community, especially during the breaking of the fast known as Iftar. But for the inhabitants of war-ravaged Gaza, this month will be different from all previous ones. Gaza has been enduring a genocidal war marked by bombings, siege, and the dehumanization of Palestinians. This dehumanization turns children, pregnant women, and the elderly into legitimate targets for Israeli soldiers. Harrowing images from Gaza have become symbols of the cruelty of the settler colonial regime. This Ramadan, the residents of Gaza are facing famine due to the Israeli policy of deliberate starvation, with the sole objective being to make Gaza virtually uninhabitable. This situation arises because Israel has failed to weaken the Hamas resistance group militarily, or propose a plan for Gaza's future that does not involve Hamas as a representative of the people of Gaza. As a consequence of these abject failures, Israel has opted for a new strategy in Gaza to create a situation where no one emerges victorious, even though it is the regime that has faced defeat. The strategy of rendering Gaza uninhabitable and ungovernable involves provoking absolute chaos in the territory and creating a situation of full-scale famine. According to this toxic colonial strategy, if no political force is capable of maintaining even a minimum of governmental stability in the territory, it becomes entirely dependent on humanitarian aid. In the case of Gaza, the famine strategy designed by the Zionist colonial occupation is complemented by the distribution of humanitarian aid by the United States, described by many as a show reinforcing the dependency of the Palestinian territory and keeping it in a state of permanent chaos. The images of malnourished Palestinian bodies have become common on social media sites in recent days, even though the mainstream Western media continues to reduce these colossal human losses into cold statistics. The graphic images of mutilated bodies or malnourished babies are part of the daily reality faced by Palestinians of Gaza. The issue is not to create despair or evoke sympathy, but to expose the atrocities of the Zionist colonial occupation regime, which has assumed frightening proportions since 7th of October last year. Israel obsessively concerns itself with its public image, making desperate attempts to hide its genocidal crimes. However, in the battle for narratives, Zionist Hasbara, the propaganda organ of the colonial entity, has failed to conceal the reality of genocide and starvation it has imposed on Palestinians. During this holy month, it is also important to highlight the colonial expansion in other parts of Palestine, such as the occupied West Bank. Recently, the colonial regime approved the construction of more illegal settlements in the region. Many tougher restrictions have also been imposed on Palestinian worshippers from accessing the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the sacred month of Ramadan, with reports of multiple deadly raids on several parts of the occupied city of Al-Quds recently resulting in the martyrdom of at least 4 Palestinians. One of them was a 13-year-old teenage Palestinian boy who was shot and martyred by an Israeli sniper whilst bursting firecrackers outside his house near Shufat camp in occupied city of Al-Quds. The genocide and starvation in Gaza are meticulously designed to inflict harm and create atrocious conditions for the local population. Several Gaza residents have spoken about the deliberate destruction of farmland in the area, aiming to keep the population subdued and deprived of any ability to feed themselves. The destruction of fertile soil in Gaza with the clear aim of causing famine can also be understood through the decision of the occupying regime to flood tunnels in Gaza with seawater. According to several experts, this action would have led to the destruction of these soils and their potential agricultural use. Amid death and destruction, Israel continues its psychological warfare against Palestinians of Gaza. The leaflets dropped by the regime urge people to feed the needy, which rights activists perceive as a cruel irony given the situation of famine imposed by Israel itself. The message of feeding the needy reveals the insignificance of Palestinian lives to the colonial forces. Furthermore, it underscores the dehumanization of the Palestinian population and along with it, the normalization of extermination, domination, exploitation, premature death, and even conditions worse than death, such as ruthless torture. For decades, Palestinians have lived in constant anticipation of death, a reality dating back before even 1947. Colonized individuals often anticipate degradation, humiliation, and murder. During the month of Ramadan, the Muslim community is particularly aware of the divine blessings in their daily lives. The notion of divinity should not be interpreted as something separate from earthly reality. On the contrary, the divinity of the Holy Quran implies a political struggle to establish a just community in this world. We cannot speak of justice, much less build a just society, while Gaza and the rest of Palestine continue to suffer genocide and starvation. The English website of Al Mayadeen Television Network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Ramadan, the month of fasting and divine grace, has commenced again. Fasting is not merely an abstention from food, but an exercise in self-restraint and self-discipline. It's also the time for Muslims to reflect on the challenges that they face and reaffirm their commitment to the Quranic teachings of unity and standing up against all forms and manifestations of evil. At the moment, the most pressing issue for Muslims is related to the besieged Gaza Strip, where the US-backed Israeli war of genocide, now in its 6th month, has already claimed over tens of thousands of precious lives, many of them Palestinian women and children. The efforts to broker a truce between the commencement of the holy month, in which the Holy Quran was revealed in its entirety, failed to materialize due to the occupying regime's hard-nosed stance. With Israel intent on committing more massacres and war crimes ahead of a potential invasion of southern Gaza Strip, city of Rafah, it is clear that securing the release of Israeli captives in Gaza was never high on Israel's agenda. What they seek is the obliteration of Hamas, which in reality means the Palestinians of Gaza. As the month of mercy, Ramadan has always been an opportune time to bring about ceasefire agreements, as was the case between Saudi Arabia and Yemen, who agreed to a truce agreement in 2022, coinciding with the start of Ramadan that year. The ethnic Malay Muslim separatists in Thailand and the Thai government have also agreed in principle to a ceasefire spanning the holy month of Ramadan and the Thai festival of Songkran in mid-April. Earlier this week, the UN Security Council also adopted a UK-drafted resolution that called for a Ramadan ceasefire in Sudan amid the country's devastating civil war. One of the reasons Ramadan is known as the Month of Mercy is because the gates of heaven are open while those of hell are considered closed to the sincere believers.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. Well, once more, this is Asma at your service. As for today, we are going to talk about something which is very prevailing and common in the worldly life. Like, as always, it happens to all the up individuals in their social and personal lives to encounter difficulties and issues and problems, sometimes catastrophes, sometimes obstacles, and they come in different forms and in different manners. With this concept of difficulty comes the concept and the notion of trust in Allah. Like as in today's episode, we're going to discuss this very fact that when in difficulties, how could we just enhance our trust in Allah? And I guess everybody knows that the best way to pull through all those difficulties is to gaze your eyes in Allah's trust and just think about the very fact that, okay, after all, when these storms are done, when all these difficulties and hard times are over, after all, it has been a test. The only thing that is going to remain is my trust and the way I have thought about Allah and about this test that I'm in it is going to be cleared out to me. Like, I'm going to know myself more and more. Like, the only thing that's going to remain there is my faith and how it has been, how I just manifested my creed, my faith in Allah in those hard times. Like, in the journey of life, we often encounter situations that test our strength, patience, and faith. When faced with obstacles and difficulties, finding strength and solace is something that many of us seek. And for us, I mean, us as Muslims, the Quran and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam serve as sources of comfort and guidance. Islam focuses on the transitory nature of life and the fact that everything is a test to either help us grow in our faith or make up for our sins. As I just said in the introductory part, the entire concept, the whole idea of difficulties is to make us develop ourselves into a better version of ourselves. But sometimes burden of that difficulty, the burden of the thing that we are suffering from is much enough to make us feel like we are feeble and we are weak creatures, like we cannot tolerate and this is more than I could just handle. The whole idea is how we're going to deal with these difficult situations. And unfortunately, as I just said, sometimes we might feel like we're weak, but the truth is, if we come to watch over what has been happening to us, if we come to look back in retrospect and see about the other problems that have been coming toward us, how we dealt with them, and how we finally and eventually handled a way to come out of all these problems, then we come to this point that all these difficulties are going to be done. And the entire thing that is going to help you is your connection with the skies above, like how you strengthen the faith you have to Allah, how much you trust Him, how much you see Him in every single event of your life is going to tell you a lot about how to solve the problems that you face and the difficulties that you're encountering. Let's go for a short break and then we'll be back to catch up with the rest.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Your love is all I need.
It's all I need. It's all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
Oh, 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 oh.
Yes, your love is all I need. To be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you need to me. You mean to me, 'cause your love is all I need to be all I can be. I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
Yes, you're listening to For a Better Life, and in today's episode, we will talk about the difficulties and how we have to just trust Allah in these hard times. Now, there's this very beautiful verse from the Holy Book of Quran that says, remember that Allah does not burden a soul beyond its capacity. لَا يُكَلِّفُ اللَّهُ نَفْسًا إِلَّا وُسَعَهَا. And, you know, it's very soothing to know this very fact that, okay, I'm not alone throughout every single thing that I go through in this world. This is going to help you when you face a problem, because with this idea, having this at the background of your mind that, okay, no matter what happens to me, God is there and He's going to help me pull through, everything is going to be pretty much easier for you. Now, another verse from the Holy Book of Quran is the very idea of trusting in Allah as a protector. Like when we say Hasbunallahu wa ni'mal wakeel, at the time of difficulties and catastrophes and miseries and the obstacles that we might encounter throughout the journey of our life, this is going to help us understand that I'm not alone. And this very idea that I'm not alone is going to help me a lot in the difficult parts of my life. So this was about this verse as well that I wanted to mention in here, like the equivalent for the verse that I mentioned was just like Allah is sufficient for us and He is the best protector. And we actually are recommended to say it in difficult times, you know, as a way of believing, as a way of repeating that every now and then in order to make believe in the very idea of Hasbunallahu wa ni'mal wakeel, that is, He is enough and He is the best protector. He's going to advocate me through difficult situations and even in the easy times of our lives. It's not just about difficulties. Sometimes the easiness in your life, sometimes the abundance of facilities, of blessings and benedictions are also a way of testing you. This, these faith-inspiring words signify a deep acknowledgement that placing trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the key to endure and overcome challenges and uncertainties in our life. And it serves as a reminder to the believers that no matter the circumstances one is in, Allah's care and provision are boundless. He is the bestower and the withholder of mercy, and He alone is the remover of harm and affliction. So it actually is very helpful for us to keep repeating all of these words from the Holy Book of Quran. By the way, this is why we have been recommended to go through this Holy Book, because through repeating these words of solace, we're going to actually enrich the amount of faith we have in God, and the connection between us and the Lord is going to be strengthened. So the whole idea behind what I just said was to be patient, was to keep repeating all of these verses in order to help us be patient, and in the end, those who have endured all the difficulties of this world are going to be rewarded in the afterlife. And it's not just about the afterlife. Actually, God is going to help us pull through in the difficulties of life, and the rewards are going to be met in this world as well. So it's not just about forget about your life and all the rewards are going to come afterward. No. It's just about the trust, how much trust you have in Allah. And really ask yourself and see what kind of answer you're going to give to this question. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Once more, I have just to remind you that what we're saying in here are not just lectures. These are our everyday life experiences that we share with each other. And these are just some sort of triggers to make us think more about the depth of our life in order to get to some path that would lead us into a better life. So thank you for staying with us until another session. I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash He knows. Every thought I had and every word
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors, every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So the ulama, that are Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. The topic of Ramadan special series is self-sacrifice and martyrdom seeking, with a focus on Ayah 111 of Surah Tawbah of the Noble Quran. Stay tuned, please. We have all heard that the Messenger of Mercy, Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said in part of his sermon on the verge of arrival of the blessed month of Ramadan, that the gates of hell are closed and the gates of paradise are open. He also said that Satan and his troops are tied in chains in this month. So, it is the best time for getting close to God through doing righteous deeds. Ramadan is the best period to achieve the best degrees in servitude of Allah. In part of Ayah 111 of Surah Tawbah, we read, "Indeed Allah has bought from the faithful their souls and their possessions for paradise to be theirs." In every dealing, there are five pillars. God says that He is the buyer and the faithful are the sellers. Their souls and properties are the merchandise, and paradise is the price of the dealing. These were the four pillars of this dealing. Then Allah continues, "They fight in the way of Allah, kill and are killed." Then Allah mentions the fifth pillar, which is the valid document for the dealing. He says, "A promise binding upon him in the Torah and the Evangel and the Quran." Then Allah stresses, "And who is truer to his promise than Allah?" In the end, he congratulates the sellers, saying, "So rejoice in the bargain you have made with him. And that is the great success." Whenever something is said briefly in the Quran, it is explained in the following ayahs. Here too, Allah mentions nine characteristics of the faithful who sell their souls to Allah are penitent, devout, celebrators of Allah's praise, who fast, who bow in prayer, prostrate in prayer, bid what is right, and forbid what is wrong, and keep Allah's bounds. Then Allah tells the Prophet, "And give good news to the faithful." When the faithless of Quraysh decided to kill the Prophet at night in his house, Imam Ali, peace upon him, slept instead of him in his bed so that the Prophet could leave the city secretly. God told his two great angels, Gabriel and Michael, "I have made you brothers and ordained the life of one longer than the other. Which of you is ready to have a shorter life?" Both of them asked for a longer life. God then said, "I have made Ali ibn Abi Talib and the Prophet as brothers of one another. Now Ali has slept in the bed of his cousin, Muhammad Mustafa, instead of him, to be killed and preserve his life. Now go to the earth and guard him." Then Gabriel stood over Imam Ali's head and Michael stood below his feet. Gabriel extolled Imam Ali with the words, "Allah is boastful of you," to the angels. At that point, Ayah 207 of Surah Baqarah was revealed about this unmatched virtue of Imam Ali, which reads, "And among the people is he who sells his soul seeking the pleasure of Allah, and Allah is kind to servants." One of the best gifts of Allah to the faithful is martyrdom. Why is it a gift? Because everyone will die and there is no escape from it. Our most serious concern is related to after death, as we don't know what will happen to us. But martyrdom, which means being killed in the way of God, turns this unclear and worrying future to an honorable happening in both this world and the hereafter. The soul is the thing that men will lose inevitably, but Allah sells it with martyrdom and pays paradise as the price. This is not exclusive for Muslims. Allah has promised this in the Torah and the Evangel too. Moreover, it should be noted that martyrdom is among the concepts which few will be qualified enough to attain it. The most important factor to attain martyrdom is self-sacrifice, and the highest self-sacrifice is to sacrifice one's soul as the most precious property. Martyr is a person who sacrifices his soul consciously and insightfully in the way of Allah. It means that he or she prefer Allah's satisfaction to theirs. They abandon their soul, their children, their properties, their positions, and all beauties and pleasures of the world. In Iran too, martyrs lost their souls. They were the martyrs before the Islamic Revolution, the martyrs of the eight-year imposed war, martyrs who defended the holy shrines in Iraq and Syria, and those who were martyred for security of people in cities and borders. They lost their souls, but not their religion. Their only goal was to obey Allah and revive his religion. Martyr Mehdi Zainuddin, the renowned Iranian commander of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib division during the Holy Defense against Saddam's Ba'athist army, said on the self-sacrifice of the combatants, "In one of the operations we faced with barbed wire and couldn't open the passage. We had to cross from there. The group commander gathered the forces and consulted with them. Everyone said something, but the best suggestion was that one of two persons lie of the barbed wire so that others could pass over them. Everyone volunteered and wanted to open the way for the group. At last, lay on the barbed wire with their faces. When they were asked as why they lay that way, they answered, they didn't want to make others feel shy when seeing their faces." Thank you.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
Arabi English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. In the month of Ramadan, there's a night when Amir al-Mu'mineen got hit by Ibn Muldim. And it is very famous that Imam Ali said, I am killed just because of my justice. And my justice, it was a justice of Amir al-Mu'mineen, it was an adl of justice of Amir al-Mu'mineen, which caused shahadat of Amir al-Mu'mineen, martyrdom of Amir al-Mu'mineen. There's a beautiful hadith from Rasulullah. We have to remember always this point. It is related to why people, if people forget, if people won't forget the day of Ghadir, this would not be happen maybe. But because people forget the Ghadir and their promise to Prophet Muhammad, things happened, and that's why Imam Ali got hit this night by Ibn Muljim. There's a hadith from Rasulullah where he says, "Ana awwalu wafidin 'ala al-'aziz al-jabbar yawm al-qiyamah." I'm the first person who is going to enter in the ground of resurrection day, in the day of Qiyamah. I'm the first person who is going to enter. And then Imam Rasulullah said, "Ana awwalu wafidin 'ala al-'aziz al-jabbar yawm al-qiyamah wa kitabuhu wa ahlu bayti." So I will enter with my book, holding my book in my hand, the Quran, and with my Ahlul Bayt, on the top of Ahlul Bayt, his representative, his successor is Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, who's been hit or who's been struck today or tonight by Ibn Muljim. And then Imam said, and then Rasulullah said, "Thumma ummati," and after me, my nation, my ummah is going to enter in the day of Qiyamah. And then Rasulullah asked the most important question, and then he said, "Thumma as'aluhum ma fa'altum bi kitabillah wa bi ahli bayti." O my nation, O my people, what have you done with my book? Did you really pay attention to my book? Did you follow the values of Quran? Did you learn the values of Quran? Did you found out what are the disvalues of Quran, and you decline all those disvalues of Quran, or you just become friends with my enemies, or you become friend with my with those who are not on our side? So Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is going to ask us from the Day of Qiyamah, what have you done with my book, and what you have done with my Ahlul Bayt, with my family, with my progeny? How easy people came to the door of Fatima Zahra, my daughter, and they killed her, and nobody stood up for her right. Amir al-Mu'mineen was killed by Ibn Muljim, and nobody stood up for his right. How come you just lie down in your home, and my children slaughtered one after other one? Like Imam Hassan was killed by the enemies of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein was killed with his entire family, with his entire disciples, ashab, in the Karbala, and you just sat down in your home, and you never supported him. What happened? How come you related to your life to the Quran and Quranic teachings? If you follow the Quranic teachings, if you learn the Quranic teachings, and if you learn the Quranic values, I emphasize on this word Quranic values. If you learn the Quranic values and Quranic disvalues, and if you follow the track of Quran, you would never leave Ahlul Bayt alone. And you made that mistake, you left Ahlul Bayt alone. And Imam Ali says in a hadith, in Nahjul Balagha, you left us alone, and we sat down on the place, on the top of the camel, where slaves or prisoners sat down. But we never left you alone, and we leaded you. We lead you towards haq, towards truth, because we were Ahlul Bayt, and we should be loyal to Ahlul Bayt. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Spotlight. Israel has carried out its deadliest attacks in months on Syria, leaving dozens of people dead. The aggression has coincided with a drone attack launched by terrorists in Idlib. Israel has also ramped up its deadly airstrikes on Lebanon in recent days. This is while the regime is pressing ahead with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, and there seems to be no end in sight to the nearly six-month assault despite growing international pressure. On this edition of Spotlight, we'll try to find out why Israel is trying to increase tensions and what would be the repercussions of such an escalation for the entire region and beyond. Our guests on tonight's Spotlight are